This month, TB, malaria and schistosomiasis. Is there a connection? Well, the answer is they're all neglected tropical diseases, one way or another, which is what we're focusing on in this episode of the programme. But why are they neglected, and why shouldn't they be? From the University of Toronto, eLife Senior Editor and Professor of Global Health, Prabhat Jha.
When we talk about neglected tropical diseases, they represent a grab bag of actually quite different parasitic or vector diseases which actually are quite different in different settings. African trypanosomiasis, schistosomiasis, leishmaniasis, leprosy, dengue, rabies, things like hookworm disease. What is common to them, they actually don't kill in very large numbers, but they cause a substantial amount of disability. The second thing that unites these diseases, they are among the most heavily concentrated in the poorest parts of the world. Now, that's important because getting rid of them has double challenges. You're working in difficult places of the world. The upside is control of these diseases is probably one of the best pro-poor things the world could do in poor countries.
Really, the spin-off of what you're saying is if we intervene in these countries, A, the money goes further because they're poorer countries and things tend to be a bit cheaper, notwithstanding the challenges, but B, there's a huge economic benefit because of the way these diseases cause chronic disability.
Absolutely. Most of these conditions, take leprosy, which is still quite common in India, is a big cause of poverty of the household. Visceral leishmaniasis, which again is in many parts of India, causes lifelong disability in those affected. These are eminently treatable, and we have had successes. We have been able to get rid of guinea worm in Africa. Yaws is on its way to being eradicated. And there are targets. The World Health Organization has set targets for getting rid of leprosy, trachoma, and a few of these other conditions. It's going to be difficult because, as we know from the experience in eliminating polio, when you start out in a campaign to get rid of these diseases, the first few cases you detect and treat are generally easier to find and cheaper. But as you go along, they become harder to detect, and therefore they need more resources and they need newer science as well.
It's also a moving target, though, isn't it? Because with polio and things like that, we have seen cultural barriers to eradication. We've seen wars.
Absolutely.
So we've seen a lot of human factors intervening, which actually have thrown a huge spanner in the works, and we would probably be a lot further along. And it wasn't the science, it wasn't actually the funding that held the process up, it was other people.
Absolutely. And those are part of the challenges of working in these poor countries. But the good news, I think, is the world made progress on polio because it put money into it and it invested in moving from oral polio to injected polio. And there is good scientific thinking behind that because the injected polio was less likely to cause disease in a way that oral polio would. And we know that even earlier on from smallpox eradication, that it required a new technology, which was basically using ring vaccination, finding a case of smallpox and vaccinating everyone around that. That scientific breakthrough of using ring vaccination was exactly what the world has tested in the latest Ebola vaccine. So the key there is that as these targets get met, it will need a lot more money, and the last mile is always the more expensive.
Does it not come down to human population? We're invading more virgin territory where these diseases are endemic in nature, and it's more likely we're going to see spillover into humans. So until we get to the bottom of the population problem, we're really ignoring the elephant in the room.
Well, I think they're related, but not causally related. But the positive news is that if you look at areas where there is an increasing urban concentration and you've got urban infrastructure, you can actually have clinics, then it is in some ways easier to control these.
Well, now, ironically, people said that with Ebola, it was people coming across the border to come to these towns where there were, albeit not terribly good, but there were medical facilities. And this was actually helping to spread the outbreak.
That's right. And the other factors, which is important in Ebola, was the burial practices where you had to hug the body goodbye. The response to it was late, but very crude isolation strategies that were brought in were effective.
So we need better resources. We need more science thrown at this in order to be more crafty and clever as time goes on. But will people pay for it? Because the harsh reality is Ebola, the vaccines, we now have something like 7 different vaccines in trials at various stages of development or more for Ebola. Now, they're not rocket science. Those vaccines have been made using fairly mundane techniques, actually, that we've had for decades in some cases. Yet no one wanted to make them and deploy them because they didn't think Ebola was a country's problem that had the capacity to make those vaccines.
In the short or medium term, it's in everybody's interest to stamp out epidemics where they occur because it spreads. But I would argue that public funding of science, which has really decreased since the 1970s, really needs to be back on the same level because that science creates products and tools that you can use to fight epidemics. The private sector won't take care of these epidemics. They have no incentive to.
So politicians, take note. Prabhat Jha there from the University of Toronto.